That's a deep truth about the structure of our universe. But for some reason, we insist on behaving as if it were not true. At that moment, the cars jolted to a stop. "What's happened?" Grant said. Up ahead, they saw the kids in the car pointing toward the ocean. Offshore, beneath lowering clouds, Grant saw the dark outline of the supply boat making its way back toward Punta Arenas. "Why have we stopped?" Malcolm said. Grant turned on the radio and heard the girl saying excitedly,
"Look there, Timmy! You see it? It's there!"
Malcolm squinted at the boat. "They talking about the boat?" "Apparently." Ed Regis climbed out of the front car and came running back to their window. "I'm sorry," he said, "but the kids are all worked up. Do you have binoculars here?"
"For what?"
"The little girl says she sees something on the boat, some kind of animal," Regis said. Grant grabbed the binoculars and rested his elbows on the window ledge of the Land Cruiser. He scanned the long shape of the supply ship. It was so dark it was almost a silhouette. As he watched, the ship's running lights came on, brilliant in the dark purple twilight.
"Do you see anything?" Regis said.
"No," Grant said.
"They're low down," Lex said over the radio. "Look low down."
Grant tilted the binoculars down, scanning the hull just above the waterline. The supply ship was broad-beamed with a splash flange that ran the length of the ship, but it was quite dark now, and he could hardly make out details.
"No, nothing."
"I can see them," Lex said impatiently. "Near the back. Look near the back."
"How can she see anything in this light?" Malcolm said.
"Kids can see," Grant said. "They've got visual acuity we forgot we ever had."
He swung the binoculars toward the stern, moving them slowly, and suddenly he saw the animals. They were playing, darting among the silhouetted stern structures. He could see them only briefly, but even in the fading light he could tell that they were upright animals, about 2 feet tall, standing with stiff, balancing tails.
"You see them now?"
Lex said.
"I see them," he said.
"What are they?"
"They're raptors," Grant said. "At least two, maybe more, juveniles."
"Jesus," Ed Regis said. "That boat's going to the mainland."
Malcolm shrugged. "Don't get excited. Just call the control room and tell them to recall the boat." Ed Regis reached in and grabbed the radio from the dashboard. They heard hissing static and clicks as he rapidly changed channels.
"There's something wrong with this one," he said. "It's not working."
He ran off to the first Land Cruiser. They saw him duck into it. Then he looked back at them.
"There's something wrong with both the radios," he said. "I can't raise the control room."
"Then let's get going," Grant said. In the control room, Muldoon stood before the big windows that overlooked the park. At 7 o'clock, the quartz floodlights came on all over the island, turning the landscape into a glowing jewel stretching away to the south. This was his favorite moment of the day. He heard the crackle of static from the radios.
"The Land Cruisers have started again," Arnold said. "They're on their way home."
"But why did they stop?" Hammond said. "And why can't we talk to them?"
"I don't know," Arnold said. "Maybe they turned off the radios in the cars."
"Probably the storm," Muldoon said. "Interference from the storm." "They'll be here in 20 minutes, Hammond said. "You better call down and make sure the dining room is ready for them. Those kids are going to be hungry."
Arnold picked up the phone and heard a steady, monotonous hiss.
"What's this? What's going on?"
"Jesus, hang that up," Nedry said. "You'll screw up a data stream."
"You've taken all the phone lines, even the internal ones?"
"I've taken all the lines that communicate outside."